tip over.
Yes, Matilda said, with my eyes.
Miss Honey was silent for a moment. She did not think Matilda was meaning to tell a lie. It was more likely that she was simply allowing her vivid imagination to run away with her.
You mean you were sitting where you are now, and you told the glass to topple over, and it did? Something like that, Miss Honey, yes. If you did that, then it is just about the greatest miracle a person has ever performed since the time of Jesus.
I did it, Miss Honey.
It is extraordinary, thought Miss Honey, how often small children have flights of fancy like this. She decided to put an end to it as gently as possible.
Could you do it again?
She asked, not unkindly.
I don't know, Matilda said, but I think I might be able to.
Miss Honey moved the now empty glass to the middle of the table.
Should I put water in it? She asked, smiling a little.
I don't think it matters, Matilda said.
Very well, then. Go ahead and tip it over.
It may take some time.
Take all the time you want, Miss Honey said. I'm in no hurry.
Matilda, sitting in the second row, about 10 feet away from Miss Honey, put her elbows on the desk and cupped her face in her hands. And this time she gave the order right at the beginning.
Tip, glass, tip,
she ordered, but her lips didn't move and she made no sound. She simply shouted the words inside her head, and now she concentrated the whole of her mind and her brain and her will up into her eyes, and once again, but much more quickly than before, she felt the electricity gathering and the power was beginning to surge, and the hotness was coming into the eyeballs, and then the millions of tiny invisible arms with hands on them were shooting out towards the glass, and without making any sound at all, she kept on shouting inside her head for the glass to go over. She saw it wobble, then it tilted, then it toppled right over and fell with a tinkle on the tabletop, not 12 inches from Miss Honey's folded arms. Miss Honey's mouth dropped open and her eyes stretched so wide you could see the whites all round. She didn't say a word. She couldn't. The shock of seeing the miracle performed had struck her dumb. She gaped at the glass, leaning well away from it now, as though it might be a dangerous thing. Then slowly, she lifted her head and looked at Matilda. She saw the child, white in the face, as white as paper, trembling all over, the eyes glazed, staring straight ahead, and seeing nothing. The whole face was transfigured, the eyes round and bright, and she was sitting there, speechless, quite beautiful in a blaze of silence. Miss Honey waited, trembling a little herself and watching the child as she slowly stirred herself back into consciousness. And then suddenly, click, went her face into a look of almost seraphic calm.
I'm all right, she said, and smiled. I'm quite all right, Miss Honey, so don't be alarmed.
You seemed so far away, Miss Honey whispered, awestruck.
Oh, I was. I was flying past the stars on silver wings, Matilda said. It was wonderful.
Miss Honey was still gazing at the child in absolute wonderment, as though she were the creation, the beginning of the world, the first morning.
It went much quicker this time, Matilda said quietly.
It's not possible.
Miss Honey was gasping.
I don't believe it. I simply don't believe it.
She closed her eyes and kept them closed for quite a while. And when she opened them again, it seemed as though she had gathered herself together.
Would you like to come back and have tea at my cottage? She asked.
Oh, I'd love to, Matilda said.
Good. Gather up your things and I'll meet you outside in a couple of minutes.
You won't tell anyone about this thing that I did, will you, Miss Honey?
I wouldn't dream of it, Miss Honey said.
Miss Honey's cottage. Miss Honey joined Matilda outside the school gates, and the two of them walked in silence through the village high street. They passed the greengrocer with his window full of apples and oranges, and the butcher with bloody lumps of meat on display and naked chickens hanging up, and the small bank, and the grocery store, and the electrical shop. And then they came out at the other side of the village onto the narrow country road, where there were no people any more, and very few motor cars. And now that they were alone, Matilda all of a sudden became wildly animated. It seemed as though a valve had burst inside her, and a great gush of energy was being released. She trotted beside Miss Honey with wild little hops, and her fingers flew as if she would scatter them to the four winds, and her words went off like fireworks with terrific speed. It was Miss Honey this, and Miss Honey that, and Miss Honey, I do honestly feel I could move almost anything in the world, not just tipping over glasses and little things like that. I feel I could topple tables and chairs, Miss Honey. Even when people are sitting in the chairs, I think I could push them over, and bigger things too, much bigger things than chairs and tables. I only have to take a moment to get my eyes strung, and then I can push it out, this strongness, and anything at all, so long as I'm staring at it hard enough. I have to stare at it very hard, Miss Honey, very, very hard, and then I can feel it all happening behind my eyes, and my eyes get hot just as though they were burning, but I don't mind that in the least, and Miss Honey...
Oh, calm yourself down, child. Calm yourself down, Miss Honey said. Let us not get ourselves too worked up so early in the proceedings.
But you do think it is interesting, don't you, Miss Honey?
Oh, it is interesting, all right, Miss Honey said. It is more than interesting, but we must tread very carefully from now on, Matilda.
Why must we tread carefully, Miss Honey?
Because we are playing with mysterious forces, my child, that we know nothing about. I do not think they are evil. They may be good. They may even be divine. But whether they are or not, let us handle them carefully. These were wise words from a wise old bird, but Matilda was too steamed up to see it that way.
I don't see why we have to be so careful, she said, still hopping about.
I am trying to explain to you, Miss Honey said patiently, that we are dealing with the unknown. It is an unexplainable thing. The right word for it is a phenomenon. It is a phenomenon.
Am I a phenomenon?
Matilda asked. It is quite possible that you are, Miss Honey said. But I'd rather you didn't think about yourself as anything in particular at the moment. What I thought we might do is to explore this phenomenon a little further, just the two of us together, but making sure we take things very carefully all the time.
You want me to do some more of it then, Miss Honey?
That is what I am tempted to suggest, Miss Honey said cautiously.
Goody good,
Matilda said. I myself, Miss Honey said, am probably far more bowled over by what you did than you are, and I am trying to find some reasonable explanation.
Such as what?
Matilda asked. Such as whether or not it's got something to do with the fact that you are quite exceptionally precocious.
What exactly does that word mean?
Matilda said. A precocious child, Miss Honey said, is one that shows amazing intelligence early on. You are an unbelievably precocious child.
Am I really?
Matilda asked.
Of course you are. You must be aware of that. Look at your reading. Look at your mathematics.
I suppose you're right,
Matilda said. Miss Honey marvelled at the child's lack of conceit and self-consciousness.
I can't help wondering, she said, whether this sudden ability that has come to you, of being able to move an object without touching it, whether it might not have something to do with your brain power.
You mean there might not be room in my head for all those brains, so something has to push out?
That's not quite what I mean, Miss Honey said, smiling. But whatever happens, and I say it again, we must tread carefully from now on. I have not forgotten that strange and distant glimmer on your face after you tipped over the last glass.
Do you think doing it could actually hurt me? Is that what you're thinking, Miss Honey?
It made you feel pretty peculiar, didn't it?
It made me feel lovely. Matilda said. For a moment or two, I was flying past the stars on silver wings. I told you that. And shall I tell you something else, Miss Honey? It was easier the second time. Much, much easier. I think it's like anything else. The more you practice it, the easier it gets.
Miss Honey was walking slowly so that the small child could keep up with her without trotting too fast, and it was very peaceful out there on the narrow road now that the village was behind them. It was one of those golden autumn afternoons, and there were blackberries and splashes of old man's beard in the hedges, and the hawthorn berries were ripening scarlet for the birds when the cold winter came along. There were tall trees here and there on either side, oak and sycamore and ash, and occasionally a sweet chestnut. Miss Honey, wishing to change the subject for the moment, gave the names of all these to Matilda and taught her how to recognise them by the shape of their leaves and the pattern of the bark on their trunks. Matilda took all this in and stored the knowledge away carefully in her mind. They came finally to a gap in the hedge on the left-hand side of the road, where there was a five-barred gate.
"This way,"
Miss Honey said, and she opened the gate and led Matilda through and closed it again. They were now walking along a narrow lane that was no more than a rutted cart track. There was a high hedge of hazel on either side, and you could see clusters of ripe brown nuts in their green jackets. The squirrels would be collecting them all very soon, Miss Honey said, and storing them away carefully for the bleak months ahead.
"You mean you live down here?" Matilda asked.
"I do," Miss Honey replied, but she said no more. Matilda had never once stopped to think about where Miss Honey might be living. She had always regarded her purely as a teacher, a person who turned up out of nowhere and taught at school and then went away again. Do any of us children, she wondered, ever stop to ask ourselves where our teachers go when school is over for the day? Do we wonder if they live alone, or if there is a mother at home, or a sister, or a husband?
"Do you live all by yourself, Miss Honey?"
she asked.
"Yes,"
Miss Honey said.
"Very much so."
They were walking over the deep, sun-baked mud tracks of the lane, and you had to watch where you put your feet if you didn't want to twist your ankle. There were a few small birds around in the hazel branches, but that was all.
"It's just a farm labourer's cottage," Miss Honey said. "You mustn't expect too much of it. We're nearly there."
They came to a small green gate, half buried in the hedge on the right, and almost hidden by the overhanging hazel branches. Miss Honey paused with one hand on the gate and said,
"There it is. That's where I live."
Matilda saw a narrow dirt path leading to a tiny red brick cottage. The cottage was so small it looked more like a doll's house than a human dwelling. The bricks it was built of were old and crumbly and very pale red. It had a grey slate roof and one small chimney, and there were two little windows at the front. Each window was no larger than a sheet of tabloid newspaper, and there was clearly no upstairs to the place. On either side of the path there was a wilderness of nettles and blackberry thorns and long brown grass. An enormous oak tree stood overshadowing the cottage. Its massive spreading branches seemed to be enfolding and embracing the tiny building, and perhaps hiding it as well from the rest of the world. Miss Honey, with one hand on the gate which she had not yet opened, turned to Matilda and said,
"A poet called Dylan Thomas once wrote some lines that I think of every time I walk up this path."
Matilda waited, and Miss Honey, in a rather wonderful slow voice, began reciting the poem.
"Never and never, my girl riding far and near, in the land of the hearthstone tales and spelled asleep. Fear or believe that the wolf in the sheep-white hood, loping and bleating roughly and blithely shall leap, my dear, out of a lair in the flocked leaves in the dew-dipped year, to eat your heart in the house in the rosy wood."
There was a moment of silence, and Matilda, who had never before heard great romantic poetry spoken aloud, was profoundly moved.
"It's like music,"
she whispered.
"It is music,"
Miss Honey said. And then, as though embarrassed at having revealed such a secret part of herself, she quickly pushed open the gate
and walked up the path. Matilda hung back. She was a bit frightened of this place now. It seemed so unreal and remote and fantastic and so totally away from this earth. It was like an illustration in Grimm or Hans Andersen. It was the house where the poor woodcutter lived with Hansel and Gretel, and where Red Riding Hood's grandmother lived, and it was also the house of the seven dwarfs, and the three bears, and all the rest of them. It was straight out of a fairy tale.
"Come along, my dear,"
Miss Honey called back, and Matilda followed her up the path. The front door was covered with flaky green paint, and there was no keyhole. Miss Honey simply lifted the latch and pushed open the door and went in. Although she was not a tall woman, she had to stoop low to get through the doorway. Matilda went after her and found herself in what seemed to be a dark, narrow tunnel.
"You can come through to the kitchen and help me make the tea," Miss Honey said,
and she led the way along the tunnel into the kitchen. That is, if you could call it a kitchen. It was not much bigger than a good-sized clothes cupboard, and there was one small window in the back wall with a sink under the window, but there were no taps over the sink. Against another wall there was a shelf, presumably for preparing food, and there was a single cupboard above the shelf. On the shelf itself there stood a primus stove, a saucepan, and a half-full bottle of milk. A primus is a little camping stove that you fill with paraffin, and you light it at the top, and then you pump it to get pressure for the flame.
"You can get some water while I light the primus," Miss Honey said. "The well is out at the back. Take the bucket, here it is. You'll find a rope in the well. Just hook the bucket onto the end of the rope and lower it down, but don't fall in yourself."
Matilda, more bemused than ever now, took the bucket and carried it out into the back garden. The well had a little wooden roof over it and a simple winding device, and there was the rope dangling down into the dark, bottomless hole. Matilda pulled up the rope and hooked the handle of the bucket onto the end of it. Then she lowered it until she heard a splash and the rope went slack. She pulled it up again, and lo and behold, there was water in the bucket.
"Is this enough?" she asked, carrying it in.
"Just about," Miss Honey said.
"I don't suppose you've ever done that before."
"Never," Matilda said. "It's fun. How do you get enough water for your bath?"
"I don't take a bath," Miss Honey said. "I wash standing up. I get a bucket full of water, and I heat it on this little stove, and I strip and wash myself all over."
"Do you honestly do that?"
Matilda asked.
"Of course I do," Miss Honey said. "Every poor person in England used to wash that way until not so very long ago. And they didn't have a primus. They had to heat the water over a fire in the hearth." "Are you poor, Miss Honey?"
"Yes," Miss Honey said.
"Very. It's a good little stove, isn't it?"
The primus was roaring away with a powerful blue flame, and already the water in the saucepan was beginning to bubble. Miss Honey got a teapot from the cupboard and put some tea leaves into it. She also found half a small loaf of brown bread. She cut two thin slices and then, from a plastic container, she took some margarine and spread it on the bread.
"Margarine," Matilda thought. "She really must be poor."
Miss Honey found a tray, and on it she put two mugs, the teapot, the half bottle of milk, and a plate with the two slices of bread.
"I'm afraid I don't have any sugar," she said. "I never use it."
"That's all right," Matilda said.
In her wisdom, she seemed to be aware of the delicacy of the situation, and she was taking great care not to say anything to embarrass her companion.
"Let's have it in the sitting room," Miss Honey said,
picking up the tray and leading the way out of the kitchen and down the dark little tunnel into the room at the front. Matilda followed her, but just inside the doorway of the so-called sitting room, she stopped and stared around her in absolute amazement. The room was as small and square and bare as a prison cell. The pale daylight that entered came from a single tiny window in the front wall, but there were no curtains. The only objects in the entire room were two upturned wooden boxes to serve as chairs, and a third box between them for a table. That was all. There were no pictures on the walls, no carpet on the floor, only rough, unpolished wooden planks.
and there were gaps between the planks where dust and bits of grime had gathered. The ceiling was so low that with a jump Matilda could nearly touch it with her fingertips. The walls were white, but the whiteness didn't look like paint. Matilda rubbed her palm against it, and a white powder came off onto her skin. It was whitewash, the cheap stuff that is used in cowsheds and stables and henhouses. Matilda was appalled. Was this really where her neat and trimly dressed schoolteacher lived? Was this all she had to come back to after a day's work? It was unbelievable. And what was the reason for it? There was something very strange going on around here, surely. Miss Honey put the tray on one of the upturned boxes.
"Sit down, my dear, sit down," she said, "and we'll have a nice hot cup of tea. Help yourself to bread. Both slices are for you. I never eat anything when I get home. I have a good old tuck-in at the school lunch, and that keeps me going until the next morning."
Matilda perched herself carefully on an upturned box, and more out of politeness than anything else, she took a slice of bread and margarine and started to eat it. At home she would have been having buttered toast and strawberry jam and probably a piece of sponge cake to round it off. And yet this was somehow far more fun. There was a mystery here in this house, a great mystery, there was no doubt about that, and Matilda was longing to find out what it was. Miss Honey poured the tea and added a little milk to both cups. She appeared to be not in the least ill at ease sitting on an upturned box in a bare room and drinking tea out of a mug that she balanced on her knee.
"You know," she said, "I've been thinking very hard about what you did with that glass. It is a great power you have been given, my child. You know that."
"Yes, Miss Honey, I do," Matilda said, chewing her bread and margarine.
"So far as I know," Miss Honey went on, "nobody else in the history of the world has been able to compel an object to move without touching it or blowing on it or using any outside help at all."
Matilda nodded but said nothing.
"The fascinating thing," Miss Honey said, "would be to find out the real limit of this power of yours. Oh, I know you think you can move just about anything there is, but I have my doubts about that."
"I'd love to try something really huge," Matilda said.
"What about distance?" Miss Honey asked. "Would you always have to be close to the thing you were pushing?"
"I simply don't know," Matilda said, "but it would be fun to find out."
Miss Honey's story.
"We mustn't hurry this," Miss Honey said. "So, let's have another cup of tea. And do eat that other slice of bread. You must be hungry."
Matilda took the second slice and started eating it slowly. The margarine wasn't at all bad. She doubted whether she could have told the difference if she hadn't known.
"Miss Honey," she said suddenly, "do they pay you very badly at our school?"
Miss Honey looked up sharply.
"Not too badly," she said. "I get about the same as the others. But it must still be very little if you are so dreadfully poor," Matilda said. "Do all the teachers live like this, with no furniture and no kitchen stove and no bathroom?"
"No, they don't," Miss Honey said rather stiffly. "I just happen to be the exception."
"I expect you just happen to like living in a very simple way," Matilda said, probing a little further. "It must make house cleaning an awful lot easier, and you don't have furniture to polish or any of those silly little ornaments lying around that have to be dusted every day. And I suppose if you don't have a fridge, you don't have to go out and buy all sorts of junky things like eggs and mayonnaise and ice cream to fill it up with. It must save a terrific lot of shopping."
At this point, Matilda noticed that Miss Honey's face had gone all tight and peculiar-looking. Her whole body had become rigid. Her shoulders were hunched up high and her lips were pressed together tight. And she sat there gripping her mug of tea in both hands and staring down into it, as though searching for a way to answer these not-quite-so-innocent questions. There followed a rather long and embarrassing silence. In the space of 30 seconds, the atmosphere in the tiny room had changed completely, and now it was vibrating with awkwardness and secrets. Matilda said,
"I am very sorry I asked you those questions, Miss Honey. It is not any of my business."
At this, Miss Honey seemed to rouse herself. She gave a shake of her shoulders and then very carefully she placed her mug on the tray.
"Why shouldn't you ask?" she said. "You were bound to ask in the end. You are much too bright not to have wondered. Perhaps I even wanted you to ask. Maybe that's why I invited you here after all.
As a matter of fact, you are the first visitor to come to the cottage since I moved in 2 years ago. Matilda said nothing. She could feel the tension growing and growing in the room.
"You are so much wiser than your years, my dear," Miss Honey went on, "that it quite staggers me. Although you look like a child, you are not really a child at all, because your mind and your powers of reasoning seem to be fully grown up. So I suppose we might call you a grown-up child, if you see what I mean."
Matilda still did not say anything. She was waiting for what was coming next.
"Up to now," Miss Honey went on, "I've found it impossible to talk to anyone about my problems. I couldn't face the embarrassment, and anyway, I lack the courage. Any courage I had was knocked out of me when I was young. But now, all of a sudden, I have a sort of desperate wish to tell everything to somebody. I know you're only a tiny little girl, but there is some kind of magic in you somewhere. I've seen it with my own eyes."
Matilda became very alert. The voice she was hearing was surely crying out for help. It must be. It had to be. Then the voice spoke again.
"Have some more tea," it said. "I think there's still a drop left."
Matilda nodded. Miss Honey poured tea into both mugs and added milk. Again she cupped her own mug in both hands and sat there sipping. There was quite a long silence before she said,
"May I tell you a story?"
"Of course," Matilda said.
"I am 23 years old, Miss Honey said, "and when I was born, my father was a doctor in this village. We had a nice old house, quite large, red brick. It's tucked away in the woods behind the hills. I don't think you'd know it."
Matilda kept silent.
"I was born there," Miss Honey said. "And then came the first tragedy. My mother died when I was 2. My father, a busy doctor, had to have someone to run the house and to look after me. So he invited my mother's unmarried sister, my aunt, to come and live with us. She agreed, and she came."
Matilda was listening intently.
"How old was the aunt when she moved in?" she asked.
"Not very old," Miss Honey said. "I should say about 30. But I hated her right from the start. I missed my mother terribly, and the aunt was not a kind person. My father didn't know that because he was hardly ever around, but when he did put in an appearance, the aunt behaved differently."
Miss Honey paused and sipped her tea.
"I can't think why I am telling you all this," she said, embarrassed.
"Go on," Matilda said. "Please."
"Well," Miss Honey said, "then came the second tragedy. When I was 5, my father died very suddenly. One day he was there, and the next day he was gone. And so I was left to live alone with my aunt. She became my legal guardian. She had all the powers of a parent over me, and in some way or another, she became the actual owner of the house."
"How did your father die?"
Matilda asked.
"It is interesting you should ask that," Miss Honey said. "I myself was much too young to question it at the time, but I found out later that there was a good deal of mystery surrounding his death."
"Didn't they know how he died?"
Matilda asked.
"Well,
Not exactly, Miss Honey said, hesitating. You see, no one could believe that he would ever have done it. He was such a very sane and sensible man.
Done what? Matilda asked.
Killed himself? Matilda was stunned.
Did he?
She gasped. That's what it looked like, Miss Honey said. But who knows?
She shrugged and turned away and stared out of the tiny window.
I know what you're thinking, Matilda said. You're thinking that the aunt killed him and made it look as though he'd done it himself.
I am not thinking anything, Miss Honey said. One must never think things like that without proof.
The little room became quiet. Matilda noticed that the hands clasping the mug were trembling slightly.
What happened after that? She asked. What happened when you were left all alone with the aunt? Wasn't she nice to you?
Nice? Miss Honey said. She was a demon. As soon as my father was out of the way, she became a holy terror. My life was a nightmare.
What did she do to you? Matilda asked.
I don't want to talk about it, Miss Honey said. It's too horrible. But in the end, I became so frightened of her, I used to start shaking when she came into the room. You must understand, I was never a strong character like you. I was always shy and retiring.
Didn't you have any other relations? Matilda asked. Any uncles or aunts or grannies who could come and see you?
None that I knew about, Miss Honey said. They were all either dead or they'd gone to Australia. And that's still the way it is now, I'm afraid.
So you grew up in that house alone with your aunt, Matilda said. But you must have gone to school.
Of course, Miss Honey said. I went to the same school you're going to now, but I lived at home.
Miss Honey paused and stared down into her empty tea mug.
I think what I am trying to explain to you, she said, is that over the years I became so completely cowed and dominated by this monster of an aunt that when she gave me an order, no matter what it was, I obeyed it instantly. That can happen, you know. And by the time I was 10, I had become her slave. I did all the housework. I made her bed. I washed and ironed for her. I did all the cooking. I learned how to do everything.
But surely you could have complained to somebody, Matilda said.
To whom? Miss Honey said. And anyway, I was far too terrified to complain. I told you I was her slave.
Did she beat you?
Let's not go into details, Miss Honey said.
How simply awful, Matilda said. Did you cry nearly all the time?
Only when I was alone, Miss Honey said. I wasn't allowed to cry in front of her, but I lived in fear.
What happened when you left school? Matilda asked.
I was a bright pupil, Miss Honey said. I could easily have got into university, but there was no question of that.
Why not, Miss Honey?
Because I was needed at home to do the work.
Then how did you become a teacher?
Matilda asked.
There is a teacher's training college in Reading, Miss Honey said. That's only 40 minutes bus ride away from here. I was allowed to go there on condition I came straight home again every afternoon to do the washing and ironing and to clean the house and cook the supper.
How old were you then? Matilda asked.
When I went into teacher's training, I was 18, Miss Honey said.
You could have just packed up and walked away, Matilda said.
Not until I got a job, Miss Honey said. And don't forget, I was by then dominated by my aunt to such an extent that I wouldn't have dared.
You can't imagine what it's like to be completely controlled like that by a very strong personality. It turns you to jelly.
So that's it, That's the sad story of my life. Now I've talked enough.
Please don't stop, Matilda said. You haven't finished yet. How did you manage to get away from her in the end and come and live in this funny little house?
Ah, that was something, Miss Honey said. I was proud of that.
Tell me, Matilda said.
Well, Miss Honey said, when I got my teacher's job, the aunt told me I owed her a lot of money. I asked her why. She said, because I've been feeding you for all these years and buying your shoes and your clothes. She told me it added up to thousands and I had to pay her back by giving her my salary for the next 10 years. I'll give you £1 a week pocket money, she said, but that's all you're going to get. She even arranged with the school authorities to have my salary paid directly into her own bank. She made me sign the paper.
You shouldn't have done that, Matilda said. Your salary was your chance of freedom.
I know, Miss Honey said. But by then, I'd been her slave nearly all my life, and I hadn't the courage or the guts to say no. I was still petrified of her. She could still hurt me badly.
So how did you manage to escape? Matilda asked.
Ah, Miss Honey said, smiling for the first time. That was 2 years ago. It was my greatest triumph.
Please tell me, Matilda said.
I used to get up very early and go for walks while my aunt was still asleep, Miss Honey said. And one day I came across this tiny cottage. It was empty. I found out who owned it. It was a farmer. I went to see him. Farmers also get up very early. He was milking his cows. I asked him if I could rent his cottage. You can't live there, he cried. It's got no conveniences, no running water, no nothing. I want to live there, I said. I'm a romantic. I've fallen in love with it. Please rent it to me. You're mad, he said, but if you insist, you're welcome to it. The rent will be 10 pence a week. Here's 1 month's rent in advance, I said, giving him 40 pence, and thank you so much.
How super, Matilda cried. So suddenly, you had a house all of your own. But how did you pluck up the courage to tell the aunt?
That was tough, Miss Honey said, but I steeled myself to do it. One night, after I had cooked a supper, I went upstairs and packed the few things I possessed in a cardboard box and came downstairs and announced I was leaving. I've rented a house, I said. My aunt exploded. Rented a house, she shouted. How can you rent a house when you have only £1 a week in the world? I've done it, I said. And how are you going to buy food for yourself? I'll manage, I mumbled, and rushed out of the front door.
Oh, well done you, Matilda cried. So you were free at last.
I was free at last, Miss Honey said. I can't tell you how wonderful it was.
But have you really managed to live here on £1 a week for 2 years? Matilda asked.
I most certainly have, Miss Honey said. I pay 10 pence rent, and the rest just about buys me paraffin for my stove and for my lamp, and a little milk and tea and bread and margarine. That's all I need, really. As I told you, I have a jolly good tuck-in at the school lunch.
Matilda stared at her. What a marvellously brave thing Miss Honey had done. Suddenly, she was a heroine in Matilda's eyes.
"Isn't it awfully cold in the winter?" she asked.
"I've got my little paraffin stove," Miss Honey said. "You'd be surprised how snug I can make it in here."
"Do you have a bed, Miss Honey?"
"Well, not exactly," Miss Honey said, smiling again. "But they say it's very healthy to sleep on a hard surface."
All at once Matilda was able to see the whole situation with absolute clarity. Miss Honey needed help. There was no way she could go on existing like this indefinitely.
"You would be a lot better off, Miss Honey," she said, "if you gave up your job and drew unemployment money."
"I would never do that," Miss Honey said. "I love teaching."
"This awful aunt," Matilda said, "I suppose she is still living in your lovely old house."
"Very much so," Miss Honey said. "She's still only about 50. She'll be around for a long time yet."
"And do you think your father really meant her to own the house forever?"
"I'm quite sure he didn't," Miss Honey said. "Parents will often give a guardian the right to occupy the house for a certain length of time, but it is nearly always left in trust for the child. It then becomes the child's property when he or she grows up."
"Then surely it is your house," Matilda said.
"My father's will was never found," Miss Honey said. "It looks as though somebody destroyed it."
"No prizes for guessing who," Matilda said.
"No prizes," Miss Honey said.
"But if there is no will, Miss Honey, then surely the house goes automatically to you. You are the next of kin."
"I know I am," Miss Honey said, "but my aunt produced a piece of paper, supposedly written by my father, saying that he leaves the house to his sister-in-law in return for her kindness in looking after me. I am certain it's a forgery, but no one can prove it."
"Couldn't you try?" Matilda said. "Couldn't you hire a good lawyer and make a fight of it?"
"I don't have the money to do that," Miss Honey said. "And you must remember that this aunt of mine is a much respected figure in the community. She has a lot of influence."
"Who is she?" Matilda asked.
Miss Honey hesitated a moment. Then she said softly, "Miss Trunchbull." The names.
"Miss Trunchbull!"
Matilda cried, jumping about a foot in the air.
"You mean she is your aunt? She brought you up?"
"Yes," Miss Honey said.
"No wonder you were terrified," Matilda cried. "The other day we saw her grab a girl by the pigtails and throw her over the playground fence."
"You haven't seen anything," Miss Honey said. "After my father died, when I was 5 and a half, she used to make me bath myself all alone. And if she came up and thought I hadn't washed properly, she would push my head under the water and hold it there. But don't get me started on what she used to do. That won't help us at all."
"No," Matilda said, "it won't."
"We came here," Miss Honey said, "to talk about you, and I've been talking about nothing but myself the whole time. I feel like a fool. I'm much more interested in just how much you can do with those amazing eyes of yours."
"I can move things," Matilda said. "I know I can. I can push things over."
"How would you like it," Miss Honey said, "if we made some very cautious experiments to see just how much you can move and push?"
Quite surprisingly, Matilda said,
"If you don't mind, Miss Honey, I think I would rather not. I want to go home now and think about all the things I've heard this afternoon."
Miss Honey stood up at once. "Of course," she said. "I have kept you here far too long. Your mother will be starting to worry."
"She never does that," Matilda said, smiling. "But I would like to go home now, please, if you don't mind."
"Come along then," Miss Honey said. "I'm sorry I gave you such a rotten tea."
"You didn't at all," Matilda said. "I loved it."
The two of them walked all the way to Matilda's house in complete silence. Miss Honey sensed that Matilda wanted it that way. The child seemed so lost in thought, she hardly looked where she was walking. And when they reached the gate of Matilda's home, Miss Honey said, "You had better forget everything I told you this afternoon."
"I won't promise to do that," Matilda said, "but I will promise not to talk about it to anyone any more, not even to you."
"I think that would be wise," Miss Honey said. "I won't promise to stop thinking about it, though, Miss Honey," Matilda said. "I've been thinking about it all the way back from your cottage, and I believe I've got just a tiny little bit of an idea."
"You mustn't," Miss Honey said. "Please forget it."
"I would like to ask you 3 last things before I stop talking about it," Matilda said. "Will you please answer them, Miss Honey?"
Miss Honey smiled. It was extraordinary, she told herself, how this little snippet of a girl seemed suddenly to be taking charge of her problems, and with such authority too.
Well, she said, that depends on what the questions are.
The first thing is this, Matilda said. What did Miss Trunchbull call your father when they were around the house at home?
I'm sure she called him Magnus, Miss Honey said. That was his first name.
And what did your father call Miss Trunchbull?
Her name is Agatha, Miss Honey said. That's what he would have called her.
And lastly, Matilda said, what did your father and Miss Trunchbull call you around the house?
They called me Jenny, Miss Honey said.
Matilda pondered these answers very carefully.
Let me make sure I've got them right, she said. In the house at home, your father was Magnus. Miss Trunchbull was Agatha and you were Jenny. Am I right?
That is correct, Miss Honey said.
Thank you, Matilda said. And now I won't mention the subject any more.
Miss Honey wondered what on earth was going on in the mind of this child.
Don't do anything silly, she said.
Matilda laughed and turned away and ran up the path to her front door, calling out as she went,
Goodbye, Miss Honey. Thank you so much for the tea.
The practice. Matilda found the house empty as usual. Her father was not yet back from work, her mother was not yet back from bingo, and her brother might be anywhere. She went straight into the living room and opened the drawer of the sideboard where she knew her father kept a box of cigars. She took out one and carried it up to her bedroom and shut herself in. Now for the practice, she told herself. It's going to be tough, but I'm determined to do it. Her plan for helping Miss Honey was beginning to form beautifully in her mind. She had it now in almost every detail. But in the end, it all depended upon her being able to do one very special thing with her eye power. She knew she wouldn't manage it right away, but she felt fairly confident that with a great deal of practice and effort, she would succeed in the end. The cigar was essential. It was perhaps a bit thicker than she would have liked, but the weight was about right. It would be fine for practicing with. There was a small dressing table in Matilda's bedroom with her hairbrush and comb on it, and two library books. She cleared these things to one side and laid the cigar down in the middle of the dressing table. Then she walked away and sat on the end of her bed. She was now about 10 feet from the cigar. She settled herself and began to concentrate. And very quickly this time, she felt the electricity beginning to flow inside her head, gathering itself behind the eyes, and the eyes became hot, and millions of tiny invisible hands began pushing out like sparks towards the cigar.
Move,
she whispered, and to her intense surprise, almost at once, the cigar, with its little red and gold paper band around its middle, rolled away across the top of the dressing table and fell onto the carpet. Matilda had enjoyed that. It was lovely doing it. It had felt as though sparks were going round and round inside her head and flashing out of her eyes. It had given her a sense of power that was almost ethereal. And how quick it had been this time. How simple. She crossed the bedroom and picked up the cigar and put it back on the table. Now for the difficult one, she thought. But if I have the power to push, then surely I also have the power to lift. It is vital I learn how to lift it. I must learn how to lift it right up into the air and keep it there. It is not a very heavy thing, a cigar. She sat on the end of the bed and started again. It was easy now to summon up the power behind her eyes. It was like pushing a trigger in the brain.
Lift, she whispered. Lift. Lift.
At first, the cigar started to roll away. But then, with Matilda concentrating fiercely, one end of it slowly lifted up, about an inch off the tabletop. With a colossal effort, she managed to hold it there for about 10 seconds. Then it fell back again.
Phew! She gasped.
I'm getting it. I'm starting to do it.
For the next hour, Matilda kept practicing, and in the end she had managed, by the sheer power of her eyes, to lift the whole cigar clear off the table, about 6 inches into the air, and hold it there for about a minute. Then suddenly, she was so exhausted she fell back on the bed and went to sleep. That was how her mother found her later in the evening.
"What's the matter with you?"
the mother said, waking her up.
"Are you ill?"
"Oh, gosh," Matilda said, sitting up and looking around. "No, I'm all right. I was a bit tired, that's all."
From then on, every day after school, Matilda shut herself in her room and practiced with the cigar. And soon, it all began to come together in the most wonderful way. 6 days later, by the following Wednesday evening, she was able not only to lift the cigar up into the air, but also to move it around exactly as she wished. It was beautiful.
"I can do it," she cried. "I can really do it. I can pick the cigar up just with my eye power and push it and pull it in the air any way I want."
All she had to do now was to put her great plan into action. The third miracle. The next day was Thursday, and that, as the whole of Miss Honey's class knew, was the day on which the headmistress would take charge of the first lesson after lunch. In the morning, Miss Honey said to them, "One or two of you did not particularly enjoy the last occasion when the headmistress took the class, so let us all try to be especially careful and clever today. How are your ears, Eric, after your last encounter with Miss Trunchbull?"
"She stretched them," Eric said. "My mother said she's positive they are bigger than they were."
"And Rupert?" Miss Honey said. "I am glad to see you didn't lose any of your hair after last Thursday."
"My head was jolly sore afterwards," Rupert said.
"And you, Nigel," Miss Honey said, "do please try not to be smart Alec with the headmistress today. You were really quite cheeky to her last week."
"I hate her," Nigel said.
"Try not to make it so obvious," Miss Honey said. "It doesn't pay. She's a very strong woman. She has muscles like steel ropes."
"I wish I was a grown-up," Nigel said. "I'd knock her flat."
"I doubt you would," Miss Honey said. "No one has ever got the better of her yet."
"What will she be testing us on this afternoon?"
a small girl asked.
"Almost certainly the 3x table, Miss Honey said. "That's what you are all meant to have learnt this past week. Make sure you know it."
Lunch came and went. After lunch, the class reassembled. Miss Honey stood at one side of the room. They all sat silent, apprehensive, waiting. And then, like some giant of doom, the enormous Trunchbull strode into the room in her green breeches and cotton smock. She went straight to her jug of water and lifted it up by the handle and peered inside.
"I am glad to see," she said, "that there are no slimy creatures in my drinking water this time. If there had been, then something exceptionally unpleasant would have happened to every single member of this class. And that includes you, Miss Honey."
The class remained silent and very tense. They had learned a bit about this tigress by now, and nobody was about to take any chances.
"Very well," boomed the Trunchbull. "Let us see how well you know your 3x table. Or, to put it another way, let us see how badly Miss Honey has taught you the 3x table.
The Trunchbull was standing in front of the class, legs apart, hands on hips, scowling at Miss Honey, who stood silent to one side. Matilda, sitting motionless at her desk in the second row, was watching things very closely.
"You!"
the Trunchbull shouted, pointing a finger the size of a rolling pin at a boy called Wilfred. Wilfred was on the extreme right of the front row.
"Stand up, you!"
she shouted at him. Wilfred stood up.
"Recite the 3x table backwards," the Trunchbull barked.
"Backwards?" stammered Wilfred. "But I haven't learned it backwards."
"There you are," cried the Trunchbull triumphant. "She's taught you nothing. Miss Honey, why have you taught them absolutely nothing at all in the last week?"
"That is not true, headmistress," Miss Honey said. "They have all learnt their three times table, but I see no point in teaching it to them backwards. There is little point in teaching anything backwards. The whole object of life, headmistress, is to go forwards. I venture to ask whether even you, for example, can spell a simple word like wrong backwards straight away. I very much doubt it."
"Don't you get impertinent with me, Miss Honey!" the Trunchbull snapped. Then she turned back to the unfortunate Wilfred. "Very well, boy," she said. "Answer me this. I have 7 apples, 7 oranges, and 7 bananas. How many pieces of fruit do I have altogether? Hurry up, get on with it, give me the answer."
"That's adding up," cried Wilfred. "That isn't the 3 times table.
"You blithering idiot," shouted the Trunchbull. "You festering gumboil, you flea-bitten fungus. That is the 3 times table. You have 3 separate lots of fruit, and each lot has 7 pieces. 3 sevens are 21. Can't you see that, you stagnant cesspool? I'll give you 1 more chance. I have 8 coconuts, 8 monkey nuts, and 8 nutty little idiots like you. How many nuts do I have altogether? Answer me quickly!"
Poor Wilfred was properly flustered.
"Wait!" he cried. "Please, wait! I've got tied up 8 coconuts and 8 monkey nuts. Oh."
He started counting on his fingers.
"You bursting blister!" yelled the Trunchbull. "You moth-eaten maggot! This is not adding up! This is multiplication. The answer is 3 eighths, or is it 8 threes? What is the difference between 3 eighths and 8 threes? Tell me that, you mangled little wurzel, and look sharp about it."
By now, Wilfred was far too frightened and bewildered even to speak. In 2 strides, the Trunchbull was beside him, and by some amazing gymnastic trick, it may have been judo or karate, she flipped the back of Wilfred's legs with 1 of her feet so that the boy shot up off the ground and turned a somersault in the air. But halfway through the somersault, she caught him by an ankle and held him dangling upside down like a plucked chicken in a shop window.
8 threes,
the Trunchbull shouted, swinging Wilfred from side to side by his ankle.
8 threes is the same as 3 eighths, and 3 eighths are 24. Repeat that.
At exactly that moment, Nigel, at the other end of the room, jumped to his feet and started pointing excitedly at the blackboard and screaming,
"The chalk, the chalk, look at the chalk! It's moving, all on its own!"
So hysterical and shrill was Nigel's scream that everyone in the place, including the Trunchbull, looked up at the blackboard. And there, sure enough, a brand new piece of chalk was hovering near the grey, black writing surface of the blackboard.
"It's writing something!" screamed Nigel. "The chalk! It's writing something!"
And indeed it was. Agatha.
"What the blazes is this?"
yelled the Trunchbull. It had shaken her to see her own first name being written like that by an invisible hand. She dropped Wilfred onto the floor. Then she yelled at nobody in particular.
"Who's doing this? Who's writing it?"
The chalk continued to write. "Agatha, this is Magnus. This is Magnus." Everyone in the place heard the gasp that came from the Trunchbull's throat.
"No!" she cried. "It can't be! It can't be Magnus!"
"It is Magnus, and you'd better believe it." Miss Honey, at the side of the room, glanced swiftly at Matilda. The child was sitting very straight at her desk, the head held high, the mouth compressed, the eyes glittering like 2 stars. "Agatha, give my Jenny back her house." For some reason, everyone now looked at the Trunchbull. The woman's face had turned white as snow, and her mouth was opening and shutting like a halibut out of water, and giving out a series of strangled gasps. Give my Jenny her wages. Give my Jenny the house. Then get out of here. If you don't,